This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It is Mira Sivasuthi. A recording of natural sounds from Kubah National Park in Sarawak was judged to be the most beautiful sound in the world by US-based website Beautiful Now. What makes a sound beautiful? From theories on its beauty to its emotive and healing qualities, we get a musical perspective on the sounds that we find appealing. And on the show with me today, Head of the Music Department at University of Malaya Cultural Centre and also happens to be a classical vocalist, Dr. Yap Jin Heng. Welcome, Dr. Yap. How are you today?
Good.
And Cheryl Mao, she's a registered music therapist. Cheryl works with children with special needs as far as music therapy is concerned. Welcome, Cheryl. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Before we even go on, you know, I find it very interesting that both of you have gone, studied abroad, worked abroad and decided to come back to Malaysia. I'm going to start with the lady. Cheryl, what brought you back home?
I was actually in Australia for about 5 years, and I came back in 2011. So when I was, you know, I actually stayed on to work in Australia with different population as a music therapist, and I wanted to stay on further to, you know, get some more work experience, but I guess circumstances didn't allow me to stay on, and I decided to come back. Since, you know, Malaysia is a developing country, mm-hmm. and we are in need of therapies like that for especially children with special needs.
Okay, so you decided to come back home. Jin Heng, what brought you home all the way from the US to Malaysia and straight into University of Malaya? And you just got back a year ago, did you?
Yes, I came back here in 2012. Mm-hmm. And when I was studying there, I just discovered that there were many talents in Malaysia.
Yes.
And then I was hoping that I could use what I have learned and come back here to develop a better music environment,
right.
especially in classical singing. And that's why when I came back.
Did you do classical singing professionally in the US?
Yes, I did.
Is that what you studied?
Yeah, I also sang in some of the opera houses
mm-hmm.
in the US.
Okay.
Sing some operas.
You sing opera?
Yes.
Wow. I don't think many of us can do that.
Yeah, it requires a certain training to be able to do that.
But then how did you land in the University of Malaya Cultural Centre?
First of all, it was very close to my house. Yes.
It was a coincidence.
Yes.
All right, and so you didn't plan it.
Yeah, well, I heard about UM, and I thought UM has a very wonderful, geographically, it's a very nice place. It's very at the center of Kuala Lumpur,
mm-hmm.
and it has a wonderful environment that could attract people to come and learn about music.
Okay, and this has got more culture to it as well,
yes,
hasn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So I'm going to actually play a short clip from The Most Beautiful Sound in the World as it was voted on the website. And I'll come back and ask you a couple of questions,
okay.
Yeah? You know, what came to mind is entirely different for what I think is music, but the competition winner is in fact those sounds. It's intense dusk chorus performed by various frog species, birds, as well as insects. Now, is that what you imagine to be the most beautiful sound to be?
Yeah, I would agree, first of all. The sound of the dusk chorus is one of the representatives of the sound of the nature. And we always get in touch with the sound. And any sound can actually lead us into environment it is associated to. For example, on that one,
mm-hmm.
that would lead you to the forest. And also, for example, the other kind of sound, which is we can hear in the city, which is the car, the sound of the car horn, you know, that could make us think about the busy street, and then or any stressful situation sometimes mm-hmm. that will bring us to the stress. Whereas the sound of nature can also bring us like to a more peaceful situation and help to calm our nerves and make us more peaceful.
Sounds like those what you would use in music therapy, Cheryl?
Yes. I guess for us as human beings, we are very in touch with our natural surrounding, right from the baby in the mother's womb, we are very in touch with the sounds of, you know, in the womb, the liquid, the heart rate, and even the mother's voice. So when a child is born, she can identify the voice of her mother. And I know as we grow, we are exposed to different nature sounds as well. And in that recording, I think it's just a beautiful cacophony of sounds teeming with live animals, the frogs, the insects, and also nature sounds like the wind, the water, and it creates a rich orchestrated sound, and it's natural, so I guess.
But have most of us moved away from appreciating such sounds? Because I don't know whether I can listen to that for long periods of time. And I'm going to be very honest about it here. What's your take on it? At some stage, we have lost that connection with appreciating music from nature. Do you find that to be? What's happened in our little brains?
You know, if you compare to some of us who live away from the city and they live in a kampong area, the village area, they are probably in touch a little bit more with nature, and they do not mind listening to the sound of nature the whole day. And their pace of life is also slower, and it keeps them relaxed in that way. Whereas for us, we are in the concrete jungle, yeah. And you know, there's noise pollution here and there, and sometimes we get immune to those sounds, what we call noise as well. So we need to maybe, you know, at some point, you know, during the day, to in order to relax, to just listen and shut off from all this other distraction, all this other noise that we have become immune to.
Why can't I listen to music? Is that not good enough? Or do I really need to appreciate these sounds?
for those dark chorus, the sound of nature, for some people who are away from the city, it is abundant. You can hear it all the time, and that's why they feel their pace of living is not as fast as the people who live in the city. However, in the city, we are used to so much sound, just like how Cheryl would think. And I just recommend people to get away from their busy and stressful life and appreciate those sound that is not it doesn't exist in the city.
But appreciation of music is very subjective, isn't it?
Yes.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but certain types of jazz music,
mm-hmm.
I cannot appreciate.
Mm.
I don't know how to appreciate it.
Yes.
So it's the same thing with sounds of nature, don't you think? It is very, very subjective. And what does it depend on, do we know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on where you come from, usually. For the preference on music, we sometimes, there are two ways of appreciation. Some music you grew up listening to it, you got accustomed to
yes.
it. Such as for me, it's a Chinese music. Whenever I listen to Chinese music, I can feel there's a kind of similar feeling that I have
yes.
since I grew up.
I agree.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. when I listen to something that is alien to me, such as, for example, Indian music or a music from the Red Indian
yeah.
in the US, I was...
There's a disconnect.
Yeah, it doesn't connect to me. And then for me, there's another way of connecting to the music that you learn how to appreciate. For example, I learned how to appreciate classical music. I have to learn the form, how the structure is, and then I started to appreciate, and I started to like it and love it.
And you also find there is a lack of attention given to aesthetic qualities of non-musical sounds, such as the one we heard just now, whereas music is regarded a major art form within the arts and humanities. What's going on, University of Malaya? Are you doing anything
yeah.
to fix this?
Well, first of all, I don't think there's a lack of attention to the non-musical sounds. It's just that we didn't know... It actually exists. First of all, that in the non-musical sounds, there's no fixed form. You don't find any form. There's no rules on it. And then they are spontaneous, without rules, and almost unpredictable mm-hmm. sometimes. And yet, I find it they are so fascinating, and many composers actually try to include them in their music. For example, in the classical music, one of the famous composers, Schubert, he actually used piano to imitate the sound from the non-musical sound, such as the birds, the rivers, and the nightingale sometimes also. And Beethoven actually wrote the entire symphony about nature.
Did that? Do you think that connects with people easily?
Yes, and then people liked it.
But it's not the natural sound.
Yes, and then it will actually bring them into that kind of to trigger their imagination, and then to bring them to environments such as the rivers. You know, when you hear the piano playing the elements of rivers, and then people will imagine, oh, there's a river over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Based on your experience, Cheryl, working with children with special needs, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you work with adults as well. When you talk about music therapy, how do some people appreciate some music and some people don't? For an example, genre. Some people love certain genres, some people just don't, right? So how do you cater to these individuals?
Yes, follow up from what Dr. Yap said. There's actually different sounds that we use for different patients and different clients in different environment. So it's how you use those sounds to meet that specific purpose. So for example, if I'm working with people in the hospital, usually it's for relaxation, or it's to take their mind off the anxiety that they're going through at that time. So we use calming music, you know, songs that are slower paced than your heart rate, because a song that is fast paced will stimulate and cause you to be even more anxious. Mm-hmm. And for older people in aged care, we do get them to recall certain songs or certain memories associated with the songs, because these songs are actually stored in their long-term memory. Songs especially that you learn when you're growing up, or that during an event or festive season, it brings a connection and it reminds you of a particular
time
person,
in your life.
Yes, yeah. Or time in your life. So it's for reminiscence, and that helps to maintain their memory as well.
What about children with special needs? How do you decide on music for them?
So music can be stimulative, and it's also sedative in nature. So for children with special needs, if they're hyperactive, we try not to do so much of engagement using rock, or, you know, active engagement like running around, dancing around kind of songs, because we try to get them focused. So we use softer and gentler music. And for children with autism, and depending on your, you know, verbal and nonverbal interactions, we do use different form of music to help facilitate that communication. So whether it is for them to sing a phrase or to sing a word in that song, that is an achievement for them in itself.
We're discussing what makes sounds beautiful with Dr. Yap Jin Heng. He's from University Malaya Cultural Centre, and Cheryl Mo, she's a registered music therapist. If you have a question for them on music, send it through 016-201-9000. You can tweet BFM Radio. Up next, we'll find out about the effects Adele's Someone Like You has had on psychology. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture, and it's Mira Sivasuthi, head of the music department from University Malaya Cultural Centre, with us, Dr. Yap Jin Heng. Together with Cheryl Mao, she's a registered music therapist. We're discussing what makes sound beautiful. A recording recently, which happens to be sounds from the Kuba National Park in Sarawak, was judged to be the most beautiful sound in the world by a US-based website, and we're trying to figure out how this sounds of nature has an effect on you, as well as music and the difference it has. You know, psychologist Martin Gunn said that Adele's Someone Like You is a textbook example of music that tingles the spine because of its surprises in volume and things like that. I'm actually going to play an intro from Adele's Someone Like You, and then maybe Jin Heng can actually come in and tell me a little bit more about that. What did you think of that? Shall I play the chorus once and for all, and then we can comment on it after, yeah?
Never mind, I'll find someone like you. I wish nothing but the best of you too.
The timbre, everything about it strikes a chord with a lot of people. What's going on, Jinheng?
First of all, if you listen to this music, it actually is one of my favourite pop songs, even though I sing classical. And compared to some of the pop song we heard, this pop song only has one instrument behind, which is the piano. Mm-hmm. That makes it very intimate. And at the same time, it's repeating the pattern. It doesn't change. And what is the most compelling is actually the voice of Adele and then the lyrics. Because the lyrics has that kind of emotion that will trigger that kind of more emotion into people who actually felt the same way as the lyric describes.
There was also something about the minor chords that she goes into in the chorus. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
Yes, the harmony as well. The minor chords always associated to sadness.
Yes, sadness. It does, yeah. All the time.
Yeah, and then of course the major major harmonies will give you a much more positive emotions, but the minor actually will help you to what I should say is the negativity in the emotion.
Okay.
So,
what did Adele do for you, Cheryl? Do you use it much in music therapy?
Yes, I do use it for adolescents who are emotionally going through some challenges. Mm-hmm. And we use that as a form of validation of their feelings. So a lot of times the listeners can connect with the song. It's because they are they can identify. That's like a transference and counter-transference kind of effect on that. They can identify with a certain aspect of that song that makes them want to cry, maybe. Mm-hmm. And in the medical setting, I think research has also proven that there is a certain chemical in the brain called the dopamine.
Yes, dopamine. It's,
yes.
Oh, it has got a whole lot of power on the brain, isn't it? And if you activate that dopamine, it can you can use it for a lot of good things.
Yes.
Is that what you're aiming to do in
so
music therapy?
In fact, dopamine, you know, it's like it gives you pleasure. Something that gives you pleasure will activate the level of dopamine in your brain. So, like, for example, if you're hungry and you want to eat something and it gives you pleasure from that. So it's the same with music. It shows that the research showed that when you are listening to something that you enjoy, the level of dopamine in your brain actually increases. And when that increases to a certain level, it actually sends chills down your spine. So that's probably what, you know, in that song did to certain ones.
How did music therapy come along? How did we discover that there were healing properties in music, Cheryl?
In fact, music has been used through the centuries from the early days. For example, in the Bible, David used a harp for King Saul when he was depressed. And later on, you know, the slaves sang the blues to express themselves. And then later on, it evolved. Even after the World War II, people used music as a form of entertainment for social networking and all that thing. But it's only in the past few decades that we find that research between the art and the science, when they are combined together, it is proven that music does have effect on different areas in our lives. So that's when music therapy become, you know, a practice in hospital settings, in palliative care, schools for children with special needs, and even infants in hospitals.
It's funny, at a conference, a cancer conference over the weekend, music therapy was spoken about as an alternative therapy to help people come out of the treatment of cancer and help towards them rebuilding after cancer treatment. Now, just to move along in terms of classical music, which is what, Jinheng, you have actually been exposed to all this time, I'm going to play Bach's Air on G string intro. And I want you to just help us to understand how this compares to the music from the forest or the natural sounds, as opposed to Adele, Someone Like You, and to Bach.
Sure.
What did you think? How did you connect with classical music?
I like
music?
It.
I know you love it. You've got to love it, isn't it? But how did you grow that appreciation for classical music? Because not all of us can appreciate it.
Well, I always loved music. When I was young, I was in touch with all kinds of music, not just classical music. And then I found out classical music has that kind of energy that can help me to build my confidence, and then at the same time will help help me to it's a very compelling music compared to other pop song and other music I get around with.
How would you compare that with Adele, Someone Like You? How different is it?
First of all, the harmony is different. The harmony is a major harmony. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, it's the composition is based on the string, and then compared to piano. Mm-hmm. And then the string can actually, when you play the string, the string will actually go longer than a piano. And then I think that will create that kind of legato line that will help you to think the music is longer and slow.
Okay. Yeah. Appoggiatura is a word that is used. What is it? Can someone explain to me what an appoggiatura is?
Yeah. Appoggiatura in music is actually kind of like a leaning note.
It appears in most tear-jerking songs, isn't it?
Yes. Okay. It's an embellishment to the main note that it leans to, and then it's usually shorter than the main. Many composers in the classical era, they actually used it to describe teardrops.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why.
Did you have to have this sort of understanding and education, Cheryl, before you went into music therapy? Did you have to understand all of the technicalities of the different types of music?
Well, I had formal music training as well before becoming a music therapist. So I already had an idea what those terms meant. But when we are practicing as a music therapist, I guess there are different other elements to look into. The other one is the timbre of the song. Mm-hmm. Like with Adele, she has lyrics in her song, and the other one is just an instrumental. And then there is the timbre, like what Dr. Yap mentioned, is the instruments that combine together to convey that emotion. So certain instruments are able to drag or to express that particular emotion in a more intimate way as compared to others. Other instruments may be more piercing, and it doesn't, you know, it's not the same when you play it. So I guess that makes a difference, you know, to the listeners as well.
I'm going to play a tune, just half a minute of the sort of music that you use in therapy. Over the Rainbow is one of it. Yeah, yes. We'll have a play, and then you can tell me a little bit about it. I wish we had more of that. Forget about this chat. Just go straight into listening to it. It's beautiful. So who do you decide which sort of music to use?
Yeah, this particular clip is actually a combination of just two stringed instruments. One is the koto from Japan, and the other one is the 12-string classical guitar. And the combination of these two instruments actually creates stable sound, like a beautiful combination that creates a sound for relaxation. And I often play it somewhere over the rainbow for different patients, mm-hmm. especially the adults. And they used to tell me, I asked them, you know, well, how do you feel when you listen to this kind of songs? And it says, they will tell me that it takes them to a different place. And it takes them their mind off a particular situation that they're going through, a difficult time that they're going through probably. And it takes them away from that stress that they're going through.
Right now.
Yes.
To take them away from the stress right now. But then what if it was stressful even before when you listen to the music? Sort of brings back bad memories for some people, right?
Yes. So actually the choice of song is very important for the listener. If they have good memories related to that song, so we try to use that according to what they enjoy. And because it gives them a sense of, you know, accomplishment and satisfaction just, and it validates some of their emotions that they're going through.
Does everyone respond to music therapy?
Well, I would say it's not, you know, everyone, because it really depends on how you actually use that particular music or, you know, go through that therapy process. Because as music therapy, it's a therapy, so it's actually a relationship that you build with your client over time, mm-hmm. to see results. So sometimes clients may not bond with the therapist and you may have a hard time, yeah. in that process.
So it's more than just music therapy.
Yes.
What about songs or sounds that become noise after a while? I mean, I've always never taken to heavy metal, for an example. Mm-hmm. I have just been exposed to something called emo violence, which thoroughly shocked me. Mm-hmm. But it works for some people. Some people find some kind of connection with this sort of music. But is it necessarily a bad thing?
Well, I would think that some people like, for example, I would say younger people, they would like to have more music with a loud volume. And for me, if the volume of the music has become too loud, it may lead to, you know, they will increase your blood pressure, mm-hmm. and then it actually will create much more stress, and also sometimes it will affect your sleep as well. And I don't think you would want to get into that music all the time.
Okay. What are your thoughts on that, Cheryl? I mean, it might work for some people.
Yes. I guess, like, for example, Michael Phelps, the Olympian, the champion swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He used music therapy to prepare himself because it has a stimulative effect. So he preps himself before the events and gets himself excited or in the mood for that particular competition. Whereas some, like, rhythm gymnastics and all that, it is reported that they use music to calm themselves down before that actual competition.
Okay. So they do. It does come in handy. It depends on the individual once again.
Exactly.
All
yes.
right. I could never relate to it, though. Should we legislate noise pollution, do you think?
Well, I guess if it affects you, your hearing medically, and it's
and I think it is going to the future generation, because everyone's now on headphones and, you know, the beats, and, you know, everyone's in a world of their own.
Yes.
I mean, music does take you into a world of your own. Wouldn't you agree,
yes.
Cheryl?
In fact, it can be overstimulative to the point that it just becomes noise that you just need something, just need to have that headphones on all the time. And I guess that is not good in the long term, you know. It affects your hearing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Music. Do you think musical? What are your thoughts?
Jin-Heng? I don't usually use headphone because when I listen to music, I would like to be in a kind of like a live situation.
Mm-hmm.
I always go to a live performances.
Okay.
For the classical music, and because it will actually create the kind of nature, just life listening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I like to be. And
okay.
And then the music of the live music performances, they will actually give you a different kind of experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we'll pick up with Cheryl another show all together on music therapy, because I think there's so much to explore. But in terms, just to conclude, in terms of the University of Malaya Cultural Centre,
mm-hmm.
what are you hoping to achieve in the next 1 or 2 years? What are you working on?
I'm hoping that I can lead the department, the music department, to become one of the important centers of music learning in the city, both in Kuala Lumpur and nationally or internationally. That's what I'm hoping for.
How would you define music learning?
Music learning is fun, and even though it comes with hard work, and once you have done your work and you actually enjoy being into it, and I always look for performances of the of music students, and I hope everyone can perform. That's what I'm hoping for.
Cheryl, your takeaway on what makes sounds beautiful?
Yes, I think like from the start when we were born up to, you know, the times when we were growing up, we actually grow up with music all along, whether it's the laughter from our voice or the crying, it's all, you know, sounds that's very much part of us. So it's very personal. And I guess in, you know, in Malaysia, we are just, you know, people are becoming more open to the area of music therapy. And I hope that, you know, the people out there, they are able to use music therapy more effectively with different ones who are in need.
Okay. Thank you both very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Dr. Yap Jin Heng, Head of the Music Department, University of Malaya Cultural Centre, and Cheryl Mao, a registered music therapist, on what makes sound beautiful on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.